Welcome aboard. I'm Brad.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Scott. Welcome to My Ship Story Podcast.
This is a podcast where we invite crew members, both past and present, to tell their stories about life at sea.
So come up to the pool bar and grab a drink.
Sit back, relax, because it's time for
My Ship Story. God, that was terrible.
Hey, welcome everybody. It's another episode of My Ship Story Podcast. I'm your host, Brad. Got with me Scott and Eric. Scott, what you got going on? Anything?
I've been rehearsing my lines for tomorrow. I play a general in an alien movie. I'll be excited for that.
What's some of your lines? Quick, what's some of your lines?
Thank you. This is General Pullman. Wait, you can't laugh. You. This is General Pullman. This is my general voice. Thank you for returning on such short notice.
I know you, so hearing your put on that voice just is really funny.
Yeah, I'm trying to add like some sort of a general like gargling.
Yeah,
those are your orders. And have you guys gotten this census?
No.
Have you got, man? I'm telling you, this is not like census. How many? Yeah, the census that they just sent out.
But that's every 10 years. Why is it now?
Because it was 10 years ago when they did it.
No, they do it. They do it on the like 2010, 2020, 2030. They don't do it like.
Well, I don't know, but we got it because they said it was out. But holy balls, this is not like who are you? How many people in your household? This is like a 60-page book.
Whoa!
Oh, that's not normal. That's not.
Yeah,
normal.
That's
it's a special. It's a special. How many total rooms? Where are you? Who are you? What nationality you are? Are you European, African? You know, Asian? Like, I mean, it is everything. Like, I was like, holy crap! I've been filling it out online for 30 minutes, and I've just got the general house information and my information. Now I have two other people. That's all I'm doing.
Eric, what do you got going on? Anything?
As we were talking just a little bit earlier, but so now we can actually get it recorded. So I started putting together a bucket list. I'm getting to that age where like, okay, let's put a bucket list together so I can start like really attempting, you know, writing these down to get them done. So we're talking about how like the top for me are a safari, African safari, a Machu Picchu trip with maybe a side trip to the Galapagos. Since if we're down there, you might as well take advantage. I don't get down there very often or barely at all. What else was on my bucket list? A Nile cruise and going to Petra. That would be really cool. What else?
So
was there?
All I mean, of there's your a bucket list, where is your main bucket? You get to choose one.
I would probably choose Machu Picchu because I've seen the pyramids. If I hadn't seen the pyramids, that would probably be number one because I grew up and just loved everything Egypt. Like every school project I did was on Egypt. Every little thing I did, like in elementary and junior high, was all Egypt. So like I just had this fascination for that time period. So if I hadn't gone to see the pyramids, that probably would be number one. But Machu Picchu is, I think, my number one now.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Pyramids are good, but the museum in Cairo is really better. I mean, there's a lot
more.
To see. Oh, yeah. The pyramids are great, but it's kind of.
It's pretty impressive.
It is. It's super impressive, and it was great to do that. But I mean, it's just one thing. But when you go to the museum, you know they got all the mummies in there and all that stuff. Right.
We went like, to see when Pharaoh
King Tut. They had King Tut. Tut.
When
yeah.
King right. Tut's tour came through Dallas, we went to Dallas, and just that was just mind blowing.
But like you know, when you have this idea of like a tourist thing to do, and you know, a lot of times you have this built up idea of what it's going to be like, and you get there, and you're like, oh, this sucks. You know, or it's
these
not,
pyramids it doesn't are the size of my house.
Right. So it doesn't live up to expectations, but the pyramids lived up to the expectations. Like I was blown away at how really the scale of those pyramids are. Like it's wow. It's very impressive. So I want to do that Nile River cruise to get and see some of the other monuments and other buildings down further down the Nile.
Yeah,
and speaking of going around and seeing the world, this is a great opportunity to bring our guest in.
What a segue!
Because
thank you for joining. This is a segue for Brad.
Because he has seen some places. Welcome to the show, Sean Rowland. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, Sean.
Oh, I almost said Rowland just for fun, but then I decided that would be cruel. That would be too cruel. Hey, Sean, tell us a little bit about how you got started working on ships. How did it happen for you?
Well, my name is Sean Rowland, and this is my ship story. Yeah, it was kind of funny. You know, I went on a cruise when I was 17, which was year 2000. So at least I had the idea of, oh, you know, people work on ships, which sometimes you don't make that connection right away. And, you know, it was a few years later in college, I met a friend who she had done a couple of youth staff contracts. And he asked the standard questions of how and all and what's it like and all that stuff. But the how of the website she applied to is like, oh, this is like a legitimate website that actually hires people. It's not, you know, some fake thing or whatever. But I looked and there wasn't quite a job for me. Oh, okay. Well, and on the wait list for my last year at college, I ended up getting a pretty good job. One of those jobs that in my industry would have been one that you go, oh, okay, I'll just do this forever and they'll be done with that. The job was telecom. You know, I'd be the guy to show up. And this is at the start of like, you know, they're just starting to do internet. So they're
that's gonna, just high
you know,
speed.
And then they're a huge company. You know, I went back and I wanted to do wireless. So that was what I had chosen to do, cell phones, satellites, and that sort of stuff. I remember someone saying to me, that first year, it's like, oh, it's good you retire. You're starting so young. You're going to retire young. I go, oh, what's young? Oh, you know, like 55. Oh, yeah. I didn't like the sound of that necessarily. In the last kind of, about a year in, the kind of new government came in and there was cutbacks. And all of a sudden, I was the new guy in the small department. And, you know, they're still sending me on trips, even still, upgrade of the last couple of weeks. And in my last week, I remember being on this trip across the country, and I was just sitting there not paying attention to this meeting I was in and reading a newspaper, and had this huge multi-page thing about people that go on world cruises. And I looked at that and I thought, you know, if you were on that ship somehow, that's you on that world cruise. And when I flew back home, I looked on that website again, and there it was, the ITV specialist. Interactive TV is ITV, but it wasn't until September that they said, hey, you know, the ships dock in Vancouver, so they're in the Alaska season. And they're like, hey, you know, some people are coming off the ships just to do general interviews for a bunch of people. If you're still interested, go there, and we'll see. Off I went and talked to some guys. I would think that one of them must have been doing my job, and someone was just probably something else, but generally talked to me for not that long and said, okay, when can you start? I guess I need 2 weeks to wrap up my life. And they seemed okay with 2 weeks, which I guess is kind of the magic number sometimes for that. I maybe could have done it quicker, you know, had a passport, still had to get the medical and all that stuff done, but did that. And unbeknownst to me at the time, the person I was replacing had been, he's like, hey, my wife's having a baby, guys. I gotta go. Okay, I'm leaving. Goodbye. And there was no one doing my job for at least a week when I got there. And so they trained me on a different ship. They were going to fly me down to a ship that was in Costa Rica, and I was going to train on that for a few days. And then they were going to fly me to the ship I was going to join.
Right. So was this, you applied for Royal or Celebrity, or was it?
It was a general website. They did Royal, Princess, Celebrity, and a few other ones. But I was hired for
Vancouver?
Celebrity.
So who was the recruiter?
They were actually based in Montreal, and it was Cruise-In.
Yeah, but no, because I knew the recruiter based in Vancouver who would go out to Toronto and stuff, but I don't think she ever went to Montreal, because I was the recruiting manager director for a while for Princess. And so I'd go up to Vancouver to do recruiting trips and stuff like that, and Toronto.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm like, oh, do I pay you for this flight or whatever? Because I said it on the website. And he's like, no, we don't do that here. Welcome to Celebrity. Okay. Sounds good. And yeah, so they flew me to Costa Rica and, you know, San Jose is the capital there in the middle.
Yeah.
And, you know, I get off the airplane. I knew I was supposed to go to some hotel, paperwork somewhere in this bag. I sure hope there's like a guy with my name on it on the sign or something. There's like a big, long glass wall just as you're exiting. I'm like, not my name. Okay, well, I'll just step out this door and, oh, shit, now I'm out. Stuck out here, and there's like a mob of taxi drivers. And I looked at a guy on the far corner. I go, he's got a sign. I don't think I saw him. And I push my way through. Turns to me, Roland. All right, good. That's me. And I didn't speak any English, and I got in his weird van, and off we went to some hotel. But there was a shuttle taking me to the ship the next day, so it worked out. And
didn't you have like a good 2 hour drive to the ship? Because
very far. Yes. It was overnight in this hotel. And then the next morning it was me and I think two other crew members or something like that. And it was almost 3 hours.
You joined in Punta Arenas or Limo?
Exactly. Yep. But I met the person training me, and she says hi and says, okay, me and my husband are going to go get ice cream on shore, so we'll see you in a few hours. Okay.
I guess I'll go. What should I do? In.
She says, yeah, just go have lunch up on the guest deck, and I'll see you in a bit. Okay, that's allowed. He's like, yeah, no one knows who you are anyways. Okay. And the second day on the ship, we went through the Panama Canal.
Oh, so wow.
Right off the bat, we're starting, you know, pretty ship thing to do.
Yeah, and that's pretty awesome.
And I remember that first time, and only that first time ever, the captain didn't open the helideck to the guests. It was just the crew. And so I was, you know, you go out there and like no other crew are basically there, and you get the best spot right at the front. And a few times we went out there, and I guess the canal's funny like that. You know, how many times do you go through it before you stop actually looking at it?
Like
right?
The second canal, the first canal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think by the third one, I remember looking from the staff mess and go, oh yeah, there's like the wall. Yeah. That's kind of cool. And that was it.
Yeah. Good enough. Yeah, it's flipping hot.
Oh, yes.
I mean, God. Yeah, but the locks were cool. I usually went and watched the locks, but after that, I was like, okay.
Right, yeah, not much to see in the
lake. Wake me up when we get to the next
I watched
next
the, like
locks.
The first time, like, and it's kind of like a big thing to do, right? Because it's a big deal. But you know, after the first, maybe it was the second lock, I was like, I'll go downstairs, and I just watched the. It was more informative and exciting to watch the TV that was running at the time, because they explained the. You know, the 6-horsepower motors that control the locks and the gravity base. And, you know, they're explaining all the locks and how many people are still buried down there and the machinery and all that kind of stuff. So I thought that was a lot cooler than
the
going
guy doing
out
the announcements,
just,
like as it's going on. Sort of.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, the first time I went through the locks, I was super hungover. So I just went outside for a little bit and I was like, okay, I get the idea.
Yeah.
Downstairs.
Yeah. So Sean, what year was this? What year?
Started 2008. This would have been September, October, or 2008.
Okay. And do you remember what that first ship was?
Yes. So the first ship was the Millennium, built around the Millennium, basically. And so Celebrity at the time had these four Millennium class ships, 2 or 3 Galaxy class ships, which I always thought were older, but I just looked it up and they were built after our ones. Surprised me because they were kind of junky, I thought. And then they were starting to build some newer ships at the time. They had one on the way, but eventually would build 5 of the Solstice class ships. And
which class is the Beyond?
That I think is Edge.
Edge, okay.
Yeah, the one with the little magic carpet thing on the side.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I'm oh, and that's sure also. Did you ever work with Captain Kate?
I don't think so. I think if she would have started probably on the Solstice class, and I never worked on those ones, but I did sort of tour them at times. But yeah, and, we always had very old Greek captains, like a proper Celebrity ship back in the old days.
Because
Celebrity Chandra. Started as a Greek cruise line that eventually Royal bought.
Right.
They
used to have the X's on the, remember?
Oh yeah, still
the
got those X's. The Millenniums were like, big X's, and they kind of got smaller over the years. but yeah, that does sort of come into play, the level of technology in the year 2000, I guess, when the ships were built. But signed off in Colombia, Cartagena, a couple days later. So that's four quick days of training. And the port agent takes me off to the plane to immigration first. And you know, walk by the guys with the machine guns and they sat me down and, you know, some immigration guy's doing something and he handed me this paper. I look at it, and I did take a bit of Spanish in high school, but, you know, didn't do well. But I'm looking at it, and I'm like, I got the gist of what this paper is. It's a how are we doing survey of, you know, 1 to 5. I'm like, well, I haven't been shot yet, and I'd like to leave, so this is definitely an all 5s. And I thought, oh, man, this place. And then on the way out of the thing, the port agent gets some phone call. Okay, hey, I got to put you in a taxi. Okay. He puts me in some random taxi and off we go to hopefully the airport. And, you know, it looked like there was a roadblock. He drove around, but I don't know, just a car accident maybe. But anyways, I made it all the way, Cartagena to LA and then LA to Hawaii. Finally made it to the ship, got to the ship, got picked up by a different, not my position, obviously, because he wasn't there. I think activity manager takes me to the office, goes, okay, this is your desk. Here's your phone. Good luck. And he turned and walked out the door. And I was finally truly alone.
It's because he doesn't know what you're supposed to be doing.
Of course. And we were at sea for the next 5 straight days. So
you joined
there's no going back at this point. So I signed on to Honolulu.
And wow. Yep. You were
and
making
so,
the rounds.
Yes. And this first itinerary was pretty wild. And I remember the person that was training me said, oh, man, I should be going to your ship. And maybe almost not quite jokingly was saying, you should stay here and I'll leave. But I said nothing. And I got to start in Hawaii. And unfortunately.
So what was your very first role that you started? Was it the ITV?
Yes, so I started as interactive TV specialist. And as the story will go on, you'll see why I would never go to any other position. And I guess now that I'm finally on the ship, I should describe what the hell this job is. So I'll say it from the guest perspective. And again, this is more than 20 years ago.
And it sounds like with them just kind of putting you in there that you could have probably made up your own position and they wouldn't even know.
Like, to some extent. So say you're a guest and you're in your cabin and you've been on there a couple of days. You take your remote control, you turn on the TV, it says, hey, press menu. So I'll press menu. And up comes your name and you can go over to your bill and you can look at every single thing you've bought and spent. And hey, what's this charge? I don't remember this. And that's essentially the core of the thing is now you don't have to go down to guest relations and wait in line to look at your bill or ask about a thing. It does the shore excursion. You could watch a little video of the shore excursion that they sell and order them if you want. And the room service, you could order your room service through it or you set up your breakfast room service. And then sort of the main thing I had was obviously there was on-demand pay-per-view movies.
So I got to ask you, so when you came on and you're narrowing into your job and whatever, how long was it before you started drinking?
Very quickly, I would say. I remember certainly on the training days, one of the training days, this guest party on the deck, you want to go to that? And I guess so. And, hey, you want one of these coconuts filled with whatever? I guess so. I'll give very much credit to my roommate on the first ship, Brian. I'd at least done one or two contracts, but he very much knew the ins and outs of crew bar and what time to order a table full of beer so you had enough beer to last you through the night or just go over to the casino table and join them because they've already got the table full of beer. That's something that sort of hits you very quickly, especially when you come from somewhere where beer is more expensive than it is on ships, which is North America, I guess. Yeah, pretty much. You go, how much is that beer? I guess I'll get many of them.
So at that point, how much did a beer cost? Like, if you're paying crew prices.
I think it was $1.27 for like a Corona and like Coors Light was like maybe 90 cents or something. And then if you got like a rum and Coke, it'd be sort of $2.50. That was kind of that price level.
Still pretty cheap. And that's a cool thing because like you have like your domestic beers that everybody's used to. But like on the ships and stuff, like you could get some, premium beers like Red Stripe and Corona and stuff like that still.
Yeah, and they were good about
cheap.
Bringing on stuff from the area too, but at some point there was a very fancy all the really high-end beers got put in this one bar, and then as they get maybe close to expiry date they sort of flow down to us and you're like, oh, look at this, and like the Fat Tug beer is like 8-9% or something, sort of like those super heavy beers started flowing in there, like those are too much almost, but that was at the start of the IPA craze.
We didn't have such a great selection when we went. We had like 2 or 3 choices, and that was about it. I mean, but they were cheap. I mean, I remember our beers were like 50 cents a Heineken, wasn't it? If I remember
correctly. Something like that.
Yeah, it was like about 50 cents a Heineken, I think, in the crew bar. It was really cheap.
Yeah. So this position, we have not had anyone in your position, exact position on board.
Expected that.
You're not forward facing. You're not dealing with guests. You're only dealing with programming the TVs. And so you've got a very little hassle in your life, and there's no reason for you to be on board during the port time. So you get a lot of time off the ship.
I once had a colleague say to me, if I come into the office in the morning and the computers aren't literally on fire, I can go to the beach all day. That's
you
essentially
didn't have any in-port manning duties at all?
I'll say the privileges in general was I came on and, you get that little grid of like, here's your position, you're this, and you can go here. My position fell under essentially the same as like any other entertainment manager, except like the cruise director. Oh, wow. I was under entertainment staff,
right?
But also my manager was the cruise director. And yeah. he once said to me, I have no idea what you do. As long as I don't hear anything, I'm going to assume it's all fine. And that's right. Exactly what I want in a manager. It's like, don't bug me. I won't bug you. It's great.
So that sounds like a dream job on board, really.
I mean, it's such an absurd dream. Like, I had one of the most coveted things for any crew member, it was free time. And I had that in literal spades. Like, my joke, maybe not to be mean to other crew members, but I said, on a good day, I could count the number of minutes I work on one hand. And oh, on a bad day, maybe I use two hands.
Oh, my God. And Eric, you remember Craig Reiner?
Yeah, I mean,
that's kind of what he did, right? Like in that whole position, like the video programmers. I mean, even though they were filming different activities and stuff around the ship.
Because there was videographer and we had I shared an office with the broadcast manager and the broadcast assistant. Broadcast assistant films all the cruise director, hey, we're here, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And the manager's doing the satellite stuff. And maybe technically I can help with the satellite stuff too and sort of did, but you know, you don't want
to. Out of your boredom?
Just to say, like, I've done it and I know how to do it. But
so on the ship, like, how many of, I mean, I get that video programmers are doing their thing, but how many were doing your job? Are you the only one?
Just me. Only me.
Who else do they need if he works like minutes a day? Why would I have two people on?
The job obscure enough and they don't, you know, exactly that. I don't know what you do. I don't want to know what you do. And we did at the time have a guy in the head office that used to do our job and kind of fighting for our job as it was. We once had a competition, me and the ITV manager and the golf pro, to see who could put less minutes down on their timesheet for a week. And the ITV manager won 15 minutes to 20.
Oh my God. That's insane.
I know. I'm sorry. I know you're going to hate. Everyone's going to hate me. It is what it is. I can't. I'm not going to Yes. Oh, it's nuts.
Well, you know, like when it down to. Even though like in my position, I was backstage and it sounds really great. Like when you tell people like, oh, yeah, we worked from 6 to midnight. That's when the shows were. And, you know, we didn't work in any ports because all the, you know, there's no shows while they're in ports. Everybody's doing tours. So we had to kind of create a schedule so that they wouldn't get rid of our position to make it look like we were doing stuff all throughout the day. And we were doing, you know, 60, 70 hours a week. When really, like, we would go set up things early and, you know, we would be, you know, after the disco and after drinking until like 3 o'clock in the morning, we'd run and set up bingo for the first thing in the morning. We'd run and deliver the towels. I don't know why, but for the tour by the gangway in the morning so that we could sleep till, you know, noon. And then we'd get up and go to the beach. But would that be something that you would kind of tell your home office that I'm doing a lot of stuff, but not really.
So early on, the manager I had in head office fell under the broadcast department. He was like the broadcast guy. So like they had more to do with those, like they were kind of busier. So they didn't. And eventually when we got a guy that was in the head office, he had done this job before. And so he did come to the ship one time. And I'll say I did not take it as serious as I did. It's like, oh, this is my boss here. I should maybe get up earlier and go into the office and stuff. And because he was doing work with the broadcast guys for something, so he didn't really need to see me, but maybe I should have. And anyways, I don't like, he's a French guy, so you can't tell if a guy doesn't like you if he's just French, I think.
Let's get into some ship stories. Are you warmed up?
Well, so I'll just say, I'm not even through my first week, it seems like, but finally we hit land. And where do we hit land? Your favorite place, Tahiti. Everyone's favorite, it seems, but Tahiti, Moorea, Bora Bora. That's my first three ports of call.
Oh, wow.
And at Bora Bora, we did a crew tour, swimming with sharks and stingrays.
Holy shit. Your first week and you're already into Tahiti swimming with sharks and stingrays.
Yeah, it was just one. This was a year after Steve Irwin died. So don't give to me near me stingrays with the sharks I liked. But no, they were both good. It was great. We got to our first, we were heading to New Zealand. Did Auckland and then all the way North South Island and then across to Sydney. And we got to Sydney and we had a meeting for entertainment the day before we get to Sydney. And that's where I learned a few new ship terms: overnight and import manning. And yes, we were overnighting in Sydney Harbor I am not allowed off the ship. And we got up the first night, and I don't know if you've docked in Sydney Harbor, but you get up and you look to your right Opera House. Look to your left. Yeah. Harbor Bridge. Downtown's behind you. The whole harbor is there in front of you. One of the top docking spots you could possibly have.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Sydney's awesome. It's one of my favorite cities in the world. And even though I never sailed there, but I've been there several times since then. But cool, cool city. I can't believe this itinerary.
And we're sort of coming to my last few weeks, and I'm hearing some weird rumblings about like issues with the ship, and what's going on here? And then the day before we got to Auckland, we found out the next cruise is canceled, and we're going into emergency dry dock in Sydney for 2 weeks.
Oh my God.
Jesus.
That's awesome.
And we dumped all the guests in Auckland and sailed with no guests for 2 days, 2 nights. St. Patrick's Day was one of the days, and they had a huge party in the guest nightclub for all the crew. And I think we had an all-day poker party, and a bunch of people were playing poker for that time. And
Why did you guys go to dry dock?
So one of the two, they used diesel electric generators, and one of the two of them was having some sort of weird issue that basically was broken. But the next cruise after, they were going back across the Pacific, so probably need two of them.
Kind of had to work that.
Yeah, probably. And I was signing off literally in 2 weeks anyway, so it's like, I guess I'm on vacation now.
So guys, real quick, did you ever have a long dry dock that you took part of?
Just Baltimore.
What's the best place?
Baltimore, but I mean, that was on the Monarch.
I did Lisbon.
Oh, that's cool. Singapore.
Except it was...
Oh, Singapore would be cool.
Except it was winter.
Well, we did Singapore for 2 weeks on the Sun Viking, and that was fun. It was hot, but it was a lot of fun.
Too cool. Too cool. Hey, Brad, let's do some stories.
Yeah. Let's get to... Because it's... It's 9:50 and we haven't got to a ship story yet.
Should have told you to get up. Get me earlier.
I've got a lot of cutting to do, bro. So get some stories. Yeah.
Well, so I've gone through a few perks that I enjoyed on this, my amazing job. And you asked about extra jobs that I would do. Well, the extra job that was a volunteer job that they offered to pretty much the whole crew, but not everyone could do them as much as I did, certainly, was the job of tour escorting. And I assume it would exist in other forms.
Like gigoloing or?
No, I mean like to other cruise lines, but I would say at smaller ships, there's probably some extent they don't do it. And the really big ships, I question if they still do it because it's probably a big hassle. But essentially tour escorting, if you're a shore excursion person, you can go on any tour you want for free. And it's their tour company offers that.
Yeah, it's a really nice perk. Only time I ever did that, I worked 5 years at sea, was the last voyage before I got quit, and it was my last voyage. And I handed my replacement. We had a handover. It was a 2-week handover. Talked to her for the first day, and I did all the ship tours with as a escort the rest of the time, which included an overnight in Bangkok. Which was really cool.
Ooh, that's a good one. So basically what it is how they would do it is the Shorex would just put out a binder of all the tours that you could go on if you wanted and had the time. And they would dump it in the staff bar at some point at the start of the cruise. And whoever got their grubby mitts on it first could put their name across whatever they wanted. And not everyone has 10 hours to go into Rome, but the ITV manager's got 10 hours.
Yeah.
Not everyone's going to be around for that booklet first, but I sure was. I'll say the main reason that guests book these tours, and especially I think celebrity skews a bit older, is, you know, it's a huge hassle. If you're going to Rome on your own, you got to take the shuttle, you got to take the bus, you got to get to the train, you got to take the train in, you got to find your way to every single site and then get back on the train and the bus and the shuttle and not miss any of them because the ship will leave you. Yeah. And that's the main thing of the guest tours that we sell, is they're not going to leave you behind. Oh. And the only job of the tour escort is to, you write a little review of the thing and make sure the tour's doing what they say they're going to do. But main thing is don't leave any guests behind and don't lose any guests. But I kept doing it. And it was years later before I even came close to losing a guest when they didn't show up the meeting time. Literally the next port, we're going across the Atlantic and we're somewhere 45 minutes out and going to some caves. And they said, okay, lunch here. And then we're getting back to the bus. The new name of the tour is the cave. So whatever caves it was. So sure hope they know how to get there. And we went through the caves, came out, and there they were sitting at the front of the bus. The two old people had taken a taxi there and weren't missing that bus. They were sitting right there at the front. One time in Venice, but we were staying overnight. So they were at some island and hey, they can climb a bell tower. I didn't climb the bell tower. I'd always do that. And if I decided there wasn't enough time, there was not enough time. They got to the top of that bell tower and our little boat hit the horn and said bye. And they came running out onto the, it was whatever island is south of St. Mark's Square. I don't know what it is, but that's where it was. And so they could have got their way back if they needed to. But, and so finally one time in Mykonos, I'm going to do something and pick the tour. Delos, ancient Delos is like an island off of Mykonos. Right. And it's like an old, you know, island of the gods. It's like a, like the Oracle or something. And we got there and it's raining. It's like a 45 minute little ferry ride out there. And oh well. And walking at the back like I always do. And we're going through a little villa, like old Roman villa or something. Because the Romans took over that island at some point. Thinking about the gyro I'm going to eat. And I hear some commotion and I look up. And there's a lady and she's falling. And there's a slab of marble the size of a coffee table falling on her back. Like, it is huge. It is, like, the size of a coffee table is, like, 4 inches thick at least. And it's coming down onto her. And I'm at the back. Very few people are seeing this. And in the time it takes me to step forward, this thing, she's fallen forward and down. And this thing has hit the other, it's kind of like a doorway. So there's two marble pillars, you know, slabs, essentially, to for this doorway. And she's used one of them to sort of steady herself to do the one step down that it's required to get down, and has pulled this thing off of whatever not amount of thing was holding it in. And it came down and it smashed against the other side of the marble and broke. And somehow miraculously, she fell forward and did not get squished. And we're 45 minutes away to Mykonos, which I don't think has much of a hospital. And we all got up and looked, and if you pull up the picture there, you can sort of see it broken down. I'll find it for you in a second. But we all sort of looked at each other, and no one was hurt. And the tour guide comes back and goes, what's happened? And we went and told the French archaeologists that were on that island what happened. And I don't think they understood a word of what we were saying or the urgency of what just happened. We were basically at the end of the tour, and we got back on that boat. And thankfully, I wasn't responsible for the only death on the sacred island of Delos in possibly 1,000 years.
Did it fall on her, or I mean, did it smash her?
I feel like it nudged her. She was stepping forward, and just the momentum of the weight of it, it basically, because it's flat at the bottom, it sort of tipped basically across, and when it hit, thankfully didn't
kill her.
Like, even if it just caught her a little bit, it for sure would have like squished her completely, like would have squished, like it would have taken multiple people to lift it. Certainly, I don't know how far I could have lifted it. That was the closest I ever came to losing a guest on one of the tour escorts.
Oh, yeah. How many years? 2008 to win?
Six-month contracts over 4.5 years.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a pretty good run.
4.5 years, what? Two or three what? Ships? Or
So I did all the four Millennium ships. I would only do those ships. And kind of the end of the ITV life is that in the years that they built the five new ships, the new position had piles more work.
What about wild parties?
Here's a good one. During a New Year's party, and this was really weird because right near the end of the cruise, and I would keep a low profile during Christmas cruises and stuff. And I was just walking to go get lunch on the guest deck and heard my name. It took me more than a few seconds to realize it was a really good friend from high school that I hadn't seen in a few years. Somehow on the cruise with his wife, we hung out and we had a few drinks. And during New Year's, they gave us a bottle of champagne they had won. And they didn't stay up as late as we did. And it's funny how you don't realize at the time when we went to the martini bar together. And I'm drinking like a normal crew member. And the wife was not keeping up, I guess, right? And he said to them to do her. You go, I guess we're drinking a lot here, right? But anyways, my friend had bought a hookah in Turkey and couldn't ship it home. I guess you're not allowed to do that, at least from the Turkish post office. So we still had it in the broadcast center. And, you know, at the New Year's, after the New Year's party, we were like, oh, we should break this out maybe, right? Yeah, okay. And we need like foil for the coals. And we used that champagne bottle as foil. And then and then we're good. It was fine. And then the next morning, first thing I heard as I wake up hungover was, bravo, bravo, bravo. And I go, please don't be deck three. Please don't be deck three. Please don't be deck three. And it was, bravo, deck nine. I go, oh my God, I'm back to sleep. But the broadcast manager, he got up there and saw that and cleaned it all up. We got in there that morning. And I don't know what happened to that hookah.
Well, what made you finally leave ships?
It was funny, sort of in the years that guy in head office, there was at one point we got given extra work, and that was maybe the rumblings to the end of it. I had to do spotlights, kind of like the stage techs would do. I go, oh, spotlights, that's not my thing. And I got to do, that's when I actually do, the only work I do is in the evenings when the people are cleaning the cabins and stuff, so I can get in there. And anyways, we ended up doing spotlights, and that was the run up to them realizing this job is maybe amalgamated away. And especially the reason was that they built these five new ships who had way more work to do. Just from the movies, they would encode every movie with like six languages. So you'd have to sit, you know, it would take them all day to do one movie all of a sudden instead of, yeah, I could do everything. And so they realized, hey, this job on this old ship can be amalgamated. We made it away here, and we'll just do that. And all of a sudden, on my last contract, the very last contract, I signed on in Vancouver, my home city. Very rare thing to do for a crew member, maybe. And it was that world cruise, the final world cruise that I had always wanted. Once to Miami, and then from Miami, we did across to Hawaii, New Zealand, Australia, in Southeast Asia, we did Singapore to Hong Kong. That's where that picture, the pictures at the end there of Vietnam and stuff are from. And that was my final cruise, basically, was at some point they said, you know, we're getting rid of this position. And, maybe I could have chased it some other ways, but I kind of realized, like, leave it, remembering it well. And even the new cruise director came in and he wanted to do meetings every morning for all the entertainment people. And I thought, oh, I don't like that. Well, I'm fired anyways. I guess I don't have to go to these. And I went on a tour every single port that last Southeast Asia. That was kind of the end of it, unfortunately. 2013, sort of early in 2013, flew home. And that was the wonderful life of the job. Didn't have any work, surprisingly.
Yeah. And so that job is no more. There's that doesn't exist anymore.
Pretty much. I think on the newer ships, it does to some extent. And like, a lot of it got given, certain cabin calls could just be done by the electricians and stuff. And
well, is there anything you want to leave us with? We're going to go ahead and wrap it up. If you've got something.
Well, you want to, I guess I'll say, you know, favorite port, worst, least favorite port.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I bought magnets. That was the thing I did. And so that spiraled very quickly into hundreds of magnets. But I have one that said from Antigua that says same shit, different island. And I felt like I summed up kind of the lesser Caribbean ports. So maybe I'm being unfair to Antigua, but there's always kind of like, oh, I didn't like this island on some cruise, and it's just how it is. But favorite ports, and I'll say overnighting in Sydney and Venice, and those are top tier sail-ins as well. And I got to sail to my own home. I got to give it up for the all-time number one, Santorini. It was always a favorite.
Greece, yeah.
Yep, we've had that.
Santorini mission. Specifically, every time I'd go there, there'd just be something crazy happening. I went there for a gyro just before we're heading to the ship, and there was a Red Bull parkour competition in Santorini. Go, well, that's probably the most apt place I've ever seen for this sort of thing.
Now I gotta ask, in the Greek, like how did the gyro sandwiches differ?
Well, it's funny, and specifically Santorini, there's a place I almost wore my other shirt that said Lucky's Santorini souvlaki, best gyros in all of Greece that I had, was at this one place. It's ratio for sure of when you're putting your tomato and onions and other stuff, and then when you're putting the meat. But the most important thing that is never done at in North America that is done in Greece is you got to have a couple French fries in the pita and then wrap it. You don't put the French fries on the side. They go right in that pita. And that's important. That's very important.
Never even heard of that.
Yeah. It's, you go to Greece, and if they don't do that, to-go places are doing that. But that's how it should be done.
All right. Well, Sean, I think we're going to wrap it up here. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. This is great. I always love reminiscing about cruise ships and my amazing time on ships. And it was great.
Cool. All right.
Awesome.
All right.
Glad to have you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Ciao.
All right.
Ciao.
Talk to you later.
See ya.
Bye.
Awesome. Good stuff. Good stories. Yeah. Man, what a rough life that would be to hit your very first port, Bora Bora, Tahiti. And then you got to go to a shit box like the Caribbean.
I know. Yeah, I know. I know. And what a great job.
And here I'm like, I love
job.
The Caribbean. Yeah.
What a great job. I mean, that's a pretty sweet gig. On, they are not all that sweet of a gigs. I mean, there's very few of those on board a ship. That's for sure.
Hey everyone, the ship is about to set sail, which brings us to an end for today. We hope that you enjoy the podcast. For bonus audio, and if you would like to see this podcast in video, please visit our YouTube channel, My Ship Story. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram as My Ship Story. Don't forget to let us know if you're a past or present crew member, and if you have a story that you would like to tell, or if you like, you can email us your story for us to read on the air. Email us at myshipstorypodcast@yahoo.com. That's myshipstorypodcast@yahoo.com. Goodbye for now, and be sure to tune in next week, same time, as we'll have a new podcast every Monday. Bon voyage!